Essentially, as conservation practitioners or conservation organizations, we have formal modes of engagements, right? So we have meetings, we do workshops, we do trainings, and often that is demanded as part of, let's say, a project that we are being funded for or supported for. And while there is value for each of these forms of engagement, and they have their, you can get your important outputs, a question to keep asking oneself is that, are they sufficient to build a trusting relationship? Because trust was a point that came up in almost all of the discussions. And so one of the things that one has to consider is the value of informal engagement as well. And this was aptly described in the example that Hussein shared. Now, if you look at some of the literature there is on anthropology, especially anthropologists speak about this principle of immersion, where they put themselves in a system to try and understand that system really well. And one of the questions we ask ourselves as conservation practitioners is that, can immersion be of value to us while trying to do conservation as well? And like, again, going back to this case, what Hussein and their team did was actually try and immerse themselves in that system. While conservation was important, while saving the snow leopard was important, they realized that they were part of a much broader system which had its own socio-political complications, and they tried to become part of that system, which sort of helped. What it also did was acted like an early warning system, because it's hard to be present in a place all the time. But once you have that trust built within the community, you will likely get to know of the kind of risks there are or the threats there are in that system. So that is, again, one of the benefits of having immersed yourself in a system, having built that trust within a system. Now, this is easier said than done. In the case of Hussein and their team, it took them about 7-8 years. Several of you who have worked in the field will also realize that trust building is likely to take a lot of time, but one needs to really ask oneself if there are any shortcuts to it. And more often than not, it's unlikely. Now, how do we build presence within a region? One is by being there yourself. But one way could be to build a team of local people. So Binaya from our group was talking about how they used what he called local citizen scientists, taking local people to go and work with you. And they were able to bridge that gap among the community to help the others understand what their work was. In the partners principles, we talk about a point of local champions. So local champions are essentially people who are well respected within the community, the community looks up to. And in this example, again, Mr. Ataullah was one such person. He's a local champion who the community looks up to. And once he was clear about what the organization was trying to do and that their intentions were not malicious, he stood for them and he stood with them when it mattered. And the final point, which I think is probably the most important one, because when we say we are trying to do conservation, what are we essentially trying to do? We are essentially working with people. So even if we are trying to protect a snow leopard, a wolf, or a common leopard, or any other species, more often than not, we are engaging with people. And people have emotions. And so while all our objectives are important, we also need to realize and be able to connect to people on the level of emotions. Because one point to remember is that while saving a species or a landscape may be one of the most important factors in for some of us as part of our job, role, passion, whatever we see it as, it may not be as important or the most important thing for a person within a community. And once we are able to see that and appreciate that point, maybe it will help us rationalize some of the challenges we have when trying to work with communities. And like I said, presence is important, but it takes a long time. There are no shortcuts. But it is, we feel, a very, very important aspect, or let's say a very necessary principle in trying to build a trusting relationship with a community.
Great. Okay. So the principal aptness, we kind of threw everyone into those groups to talk about, there's a bit of a glitch, to talk about this principle without kind of considering what it was. So that's why we wanted to come back and discuss, okay, what is aptness? What do we mean? Because aptness, we believe, is foundational for designing and implementation of all our community-based conservation programs. So just like presence is incredibly important when you start a program, and it is closely linked to the idea of relevance. So in other words, aptness centers on ensuring our programs are relevant in terms of the local context. So what do we mean by relevance when we talk about relevance? There are different ways to approach that. And it might mean, are our programs based on the actual threats in the area? For example, if our species is the snow leopard, does the program actually address a threat in that area? And it's important to understand that before even engaging with a program and putting it into place. But relevance is beyond the threats, because it's also about communities and we're engaging with partners. So are our programs social and economically relevant? Do they make sense to the community? And are they culturally appropriate? Which is also really important before and even engaging in some communities. For example, the example Ranjini gave might not be culturally appropriate. It might be really hard to break the barriers of engaging with the women. So that's something to consider before even starting a program. And also the understanding the role of how to engage with the community. Do we engage with the community at the household level? Because some schemes like the insurance program will be households which might be engaged. Or it might be the whole community in itself joins with the program. And this will really depend on the program itself, but also the community or the local government or village council you're engaging with. And finally, the way you engage with communities might also depend on the social capital and the skill sets of the community or the interests of that community in itself. So these are really important themes to think about in terms of aptness, and that's what we were considering when we were thinking about this theme. But another thing that kind of fits in all of these principles of understanding the local context is, how do we understand the local context? Well, it can be based on sometimes on remembering the science. Have we assessed the threats in a robust way, or do we understand the community? Is it based on interviews a long time, for example, the principal presence, spending time in the community? So before we go on, I need to ask, what was the feeling that you as participants felt was most important when you consider aptness in a community conservation? So we're going to do another poll. So I'm going to start the poll on aptness. And there's no right answer. There's no right answer. So please feel free to answer as you feel. But you have to choose just one. It's not multiple choice here. It's what you feel is the most important thing when putting into place a community conservation program in your context. So you might choose one example. This can be a broad kind of assessment of in your, where you work, what is the most important when you think of aptness and how to make it most relevant. So I see answers are coming in. And remember, like, all of these might be important, but often we don't, as team, as conservationists, as NGOs, we might not have the capacity to address everything. To address the threats, address the socioeconomic diversity, the culture. You know, I mean, of course you want to, and that's why we want to keep it behind, but we might not, we might have to have some priorities on what each program kind of focuses on. So that's why we wanted to discuss. So the polls are coming in, and it's nice to see, I'm gonna share the results with everyone, and it's nice to see that almost 50% of you think that it's the community's social capital and interest that is important. And that's interesting, because that might highlight how, for a program to be successful, perhaps it needs, and successful in the long term, it needs to depend on them wanting to be engaged and on their strengths as a community. So that's really interesting. Thank you, everyone. So Ranjini, Can you remind us what were the priorities of SLE in your setting in Kibber? And looking back in terms of relevance and local context, do you think they were the right ones? Like, would you have changed anything now looking back, starting SLE when you started that program and thinking about aptness?
So yeah, Justine, I think when our team started SLE, the main focus was on involving women in the conversation. Because as we had mentioned, a lot of our previous programs excluded women from conservation, right? So that's our angle with which we joined in. But perhaps we could have had stronger linkages to threats right from the start. You know, and the other area that maybe we could have focused more on is we often treat communities as homogenous, and in the same way we treated women as homogenous, right? But actually there's a whole range of intersectionality that happens even there. There are power dynamics that happen there. There's voices that get heard, there are voices that don't get heard. And maybe moving forward, we can look into that a bit more, right? Like looking at representations of caste, class, age, and how that play out in who.
And when we think about relevance, we also wanted to share that we don't want to limit the idea of aptness to the local context necessarily, but also consider how our programs are apt or relevant to the wider landscape. So the scale of the community program may actually mismatch potential threats or the wildlife that we're trying to conserve. And that's something to consider. So with aptness for the species such as the snow leopard, they have huge home ranges, right? So a whole population might cover thousands of kilometers squared, but the actual community involved might be just one valley and one small area. So there might be this mismatch. And if we fail to consider how the community influences this wider landscape, our programs might not be so relevant to that landscape. And human and this isn't the case of the ecology of the area, but it also need to be considered in terms of the social, economic or political history of that area, because that community might be influenced by wider social or political situation of the region, of the country. So I think it's important that we think about how our programs are apt to these wider forces that happen. And we had an example in our group, someone talked about how children are more and more aware of these wider forces with their education, as with the internet, and therefore they might be important voices to try to capture that in our programs because they're much more aware about these wider forces. So I don't know if Ranjini is back. I hope you're back.
Sorry, Ranjini? I'm back, but I have really bad internet. I have really bad internet though, so I don't know if I'm gonna get it.
Okay. Okay, well, I hope to catch you. I just wanted to ask you, is there a difference between tailoring the program at the local context compared to standing back and making it applicable to the landscape in terms of Kibber and SLE?
Yeah, so for example, at the landscape, there's a whole range of massive economic and development transformations that are currently underway. Right. So factoring those in and how they might influence our program is also important because they can change the role of the women in the household. If young people leave for economic opportunities, if there are other kinds of economic opportunities that also come in, like through tourism, which also brings in its own different kinds of threats. So Kibber is also embedded within this larger landscape that kind of influences how the program works. What are the new kinds of threats that happens? What are the economic opportunities that happen as well?
So, and finally, aptness, we wanted, and I think some of your teams talked about this, is about how aptness changes over time. And I think it's a great principle to help us remind ourselves that we need to keep learning and we need to keep evolving our programs. So highlighting the agility and the flexibility of our programs over time to maybe address new threats or to, you know, to address the changes in the situation of our partners. And I was going to share an example from Charu, but I won't take up Charu's time because he might share an example that happened also I think near Kibber, related to village reserves towards Ungulates, and how that changed, how their understanding of the situation changed over time, and the program. But I wanted, and also, I mean, this is important in terms of scaling up. We might assume our program is successful in one area and then makes sense throughout the whole landscape, but this might not be the case. There might be different circumstances in each community that we need to consider. So Ranjini, can you share a little bit how SLE program kind of evolved over time? Or, you know, how if there was anything unexpected or any surprises that you saw that maybe led to the program changing?
Yeah, I'll keep it really short because then we can move to Charu. So very, very quickly, there were a couple of things. I think it was really interesting to see the active action that women took, especially with them preventing poaching. You know, like there were several instances in the conservation diary where they talk about going up to laborers, going up to different people and ask, and preventing poaching from happening when they saw it happening. So that, I think, was quite impressive. The other interesting thing that came up was the linkages that happened between women in the program versus with the other programs that were already happening. Like, for example, they started linking up with the conservation education program, you know, and this also started building ties with other programs. So over time, it started evolving into, while we initially didn't start out where we were looking so much at the threats, I think it started evolving where the threats started getting factored in more and more. And these important other linkages with other programs where they became more active participants in conservation also came about.
Thanks, Ranjini. Thanks for sharing so much. And before we go to Charu, just wanted to share, we haven't shared this diagram yet, or Juliet maybe shared in the beginning, but this might be a diagram that you can see we've done presence and aptness. And I'll leave it now to Charu, who maybe goes deeper into these principles and how maybe they came about, and you know, came into light. So over to you, Charu.